everybody, the Detroit Pistons podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson, and today I'm joined by Omari Sankofa of the Detroit Free Press. What's up, Omari?
Man, it's going good, man. Season's done, so it's just nice, you know. It's like I have my nights back watching the Grizzlies later. Life's good, man. But how's everything with you, man?
Everything's good with me, man. I am also going to watch the Grizzlies later. I was going to ask you about that. Do you still watch the Grizzlies? I saw you got a lot of love from Memphis people when you were like, oh, yeah, this is weird. This is the first time I've seen the Grizzlies in person in, like, 18 months.
Yeah, no, like, I still, keep in touch with a lot of people down there, on Twitter and elsewhere. That was weird because it's one of those things you don't even realize until it happens. My last time watching the Grizzlies in person was, March 2020. And, didn't know that would be my last time watching the Grizzlies in person. And, obviously just a weird year. But, I'm still fairly ingrained in the Grizzlies Twitter. Couldn't watch them as much during the season, just because it's, it's tough, obviously, when, you have 3 or 4 games yourself you have to watch every night and have yourself going on. But did try to watch them a bit more toward the end. And especially, this past week kind of getting ready for the play-in. So, they had a nice little squad. I showed them some love on my ballot. Put Desmond Bane on there for the all-rookie team, second team. And, it's funny. I covered 2 rebuilds in the span of 3 years. It's just like at some point one of these teams got to win the playoff game. So maybe that'll be the Grizzlies. I guess we'll see.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like you wanted them to win a playoff game this year, because then, you're doing Zoom playoffs, and that's even worse than Zoom regular seasons.
Yeah, like, I didn't even think about that, because obviously the Pistons were going in, but I think I saw Tony, Utah Jazz Tony, mention that it was all Zoom. I'm just like, man, like, that that kind of just kills the playoff atmosphere, not just from a fan standpoint, although I guess some arenas will have fans now, but from media, too. Maybe it's a little bit better when you've been covering that same team that those guys, you've been in that locker room. But, this Pistons team, we really haven't met too many of these guys in person. So if they were in the playoffs, it would still be kind of weird, But it is what it is at this point. Hopefully as the playoffs goes on, we'll see the NBA begin to kind of lift some of the restrictions. Because if the New York Knicks could have, I think, 19,000 fans in the arena or 13,000, however many, like, I think you could have media there, too. So I guess we'll just see.
I didn't see the Knicks had that many people in the arena. That's crazy. And I was actually going to ask you, though, about, relationship building and stuff with these Pistons dudes, because I know a lot of that stuff happens outside of the press conference, right? Like, you're around these – if you're traveling with the team under normal circumstances, you're bumping into them in the hallways a lot, right? Like, you're going to shoot around and just, shooting the shit with them and stuff. And, that's how you build relationships. That's how you get stories. That's how you, just treat them like the coworkers that they are in a weird way. You never really got a chance to do that. And they flipped half the team over, while you were here. So I was just going to ask you, do you have a good sense of, the dudes on the team?
A little bit just from Zoom, but you definitely lose a lot. I mean, because you really do get to know the guys really well when you are in a locker room and you just kind of see them out and about. I think about, the year and a half, 2 years I covered the Memphis Grizzlies, and you know those guys, you really get to know them pretty well. You meet different people who are with them. I remember night of the draft, you not only meet, John Morant for the first time, but you meet, some people in his family. Like, I see his dad a lot, just flying from city to city because his dad would travel a lot with him. Just across the board, you lose all of that. And it definitely feels like you don't know this Pistons team quite as well, just because almost all of your contact with them, maybe, outside of a phone call here and there, if, you're working on a story and you got that set up. But, yeah, for the most part, it's just been kind of through the screen, and you lose a lot there. So I know myself, everybody else in the media, we would love, for things to kind of get rolling, get the locker room open back. I don't know if the players want the locker room open. Maybe there'll be some resistance there. But, just from a media standpoint, that stuff just makes the job so much easier. So we will see. I saw Summer League, they're going to have that in August. So I would think hopefully by August, the way things are trending, we would be able to attend that in person. But, again, it's just fingers crossed at this point.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you, like, I don't know how far in advance you plan stuff, but, like, were you planning on going to Summer League if you can?
If I can, I'll be there for sure. Okay. Yeah, and even, like, the draft combine, I kind of had a conversation with one of my editors a couple weeks ago, like, you know, do we know what's going on?
Oh, that's right, because they're actually going to have a combine this year.
Right. Yeah, in Chicago, I guess last week of June, which is 30 days from now. So, you know, if they are going to have something, I guess we would, maybe we would know by now, or maybe we'll find out soon. But Summer League, for sure, I would think that if media is there, and I hope that they would have media there, I'll definitely be at Vegas.
Yeah, I think August feels like long enough to where it's like if you, like, things should be back to normal-ish by August. Like, I think, like, you know, the mental state of people and stuff is not going to be perfect by August. It might still be, like, weird being in a crowd of people by August, but it'll be, like, quote-unquote safe to be in a crowd of people by August. And
yeah.
So, like, that hopefully leads that to like, fans and media being able to attend.
For sure. You know, like, you know, the league could, you know, mandate media, you know, show proof of vaccination or maybe we can keep a mask mandate. Like, it would definitely be weird because I don't think, I mean, I have not been in, like, a true crowd of people, you know, since really the pandemic hit. Well, I've been to a couple of restaurants. I don't know, I'm fully vaccinated, so that's not quite the same, but still.
Yeah. That's, I mean, like, well, it's one thing to be, like, at a restaurant or a bar. It's another thing to be like, yo, I'm going to go to this concert. Right? Like, that's going to be the big step.
Yeah, like, I'm bumping shoulders with, like, 8,000 people right now. Like, it seems just funny now, just thinking back then. Like, I went to a Travis Scott concert with one of my buddies back in, like, 2015, and I forget what the place is called. It's, like, not too far from Midtown in Detroit. Like, giant warehouse. Like, just packed, crammed with, like, maybe 5,000-6,000 people moshing and stuff. Like, it's like, like, what viruses did I come into contact that night that I just had no clue about? Like, that's the stuff you don't think about 5 years ago that you think about now. It's like, you know, I didn't know viruses could spread like that. But
yeah.
But I would hope by August that, you know, we would start lifting a lot of stuff. It's like 60% of adults vaccinated at this point, making pretty good progress. So the league's been pretty good about, for the most part, I feel like they've been pretty good about, you know, trying to keep stuff as safe as possible, you know, without, you know, financially falling apart. So, you know, I would hope once things become safe enough, they would go ahead and lift those restrictions.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So the last time we talked, it was December. The Pistons had not played a preseason game, and we talked about LiAngelo Ball and Blake Griffin. So now it's May. They've won 20 games, and I'm going to ask you about, like, Hamidou Diallo and Frank Jackson. How did this year go for the Pistons in your mind? Like, what was this a good year?
It was a good year, but it's like the season simultaneously felt long and short because the season just had so many different phases to it. Like, there was, like, that, you know, like, you just think, like, it feels like it's been so long since they parted ways with Blake Griffin, and that was only 2 months ago. You know, that just feels like an entirely different team than the team we've watched over the last 2 months when it's just primarily been the young guys playing. You know, you mentioned Hamidou Diallo and Frank Jackson, two guys who were not even on the roster, you know, when we talked in early December, and, you know, now look like two guys who, you know, factor pretty strongly into the future. You know, Diallo being a guy that Troy Weaver has history with going back to OKC, and even before that, he mentioned on Monday that he had scouted Diallo since he was 16 years old. You know, obviously he was a five-star recruit. So yeah, I mean, I think it was a good season for the Pistons. Like, if I had to grade it, like, even though it's a 21 season, I guess as far as rebuilds go, I give it like a B+, because pretty much every young guy on the roster showed something to make you think that when they do make the playoffs again, and, you know, not just, you know, barely squeaking as an eighth seed, but like make the playoffs, that a good amount of these young guys could be on that team. You know, which for a rebuild season, that's everything you can ask for. You know, when you're talking about a guy like Frank Jackson, who, you know, first 3 years in the league, you know, probably was more of an afterthought. You know, he was a guy that came out of Duke and just, you know, was trying to find his niche. And then to come in and shoot 40% from three this season, like, you know, that's just the stuff you can't really predict. And there's, like, a lot of examples of that. So I would give it a B+. You know, I think for the most part, every guy showed something, and that's all you could really ask for, especially for a team that doesn't have a great track record for player development.
Yeah, even the dudes who you don't necessarily expect to be a long-term part of the team showed stuff. And I think that's a really – you put that on the coaching staff. You put some of that on the guys themselves, right? Like, you know, you could have like an Al Horford situation in OKC where, you know, guys are just sitting and they're bored. And, or you could have like a Kevin Love situation in Cleveland where guys – aren't playing because they don't want to be there and it's messing with the vibe of the team. And none of that happened, right? Like even the Blake Griffin thing, I think they were Blake and Derek were more frustrated with the losing than they were like, you know, mad at the Detroit Pistons for holding them hostage. And, you know, like you said, both those situations got resolved seemingly so long ago that it doesn't even really feel like that happened this season. And so, like, yeah, I think it was a good year, but, like, man, it's a weird year.
It was weird in so many ways. I think one of the games Isaiah Stewart had when he just had, like, you know, one of those, like, 19 points, 16 rebounds, hit a three-pointer. Like, you know, you just think in the back of your mind, like, if there was a crowd here, they would be going ballistic right now, you know. And, right. You know, Isaiah Stewart's going to have some games next season when the crowd's just going ballistic because of the way he plays, but... but it does feel weird. Like, that was one thing I never truly got used to, was just, like, the lack of a crowd, you know, like, whether it was Saban Lee, you know, posterizing somebody, or it was just different plays where ordinarily you would just have this massive reaction, and you're kind of just relying on Twitter for all of your fan feedback because you're not really getting much in the actual arena. You know, even when they did admit fans in it, you had, you know, maybe 1,000 fans there, still wasn't quite the same because... it's kind of hard to, you know, scream and show a lot of emotion with a mask on. So, for a lot of reasons, it was a weird season. But, you know, I know the front office on some level, they've got to be happy that, you know, they got this 21 season out the way, you know, with no fans in the arena, because I'm sure there would have been some boos some night, too, if that didn't happen. So,
that's true. Okay, so the Sada Baby concert, who is that for? There's no fans. Like, why is he there?
It didn't even look like Sada Baby wanted to be there. Like, he was, like, lip-syncing every 5 or 6 words. Like, I was surprised he was there because there wasn't that many people there. I was like, well, I mean, okay. Like, I'm not complaining. I like Sada, but this isn't much of an audience for him.
it's a weird time to play this card, right? Like, obviously bring him in next season for sure, like, when there are going to be fans. But, like, why burn this bridge? Why play this card now?
And, like, the Martin night, too, which I thought was, like, amazing because they did the, you know, the special intro and everything. Like, it's great idea. But, like, please bring this back next season with, like, fans in the arena. You know, it's just, like, stuff like that, like, I commend them for, you know, trying to make the experience as normal as possible for the people who were there. You know, like, honestly, you kind of forget that there isn't a crowd there just because of the noise. Because presentation-wise, it's the same. But... yeah, they definitely did some big things that, you know, the back of my mind, I'm like, you probably could have saved this for, like, you know, the season opener next season, and this would have been, like, a lot more celebratory. Like, I don't know if Sada has performed for a crowd of less than 2,000 people in a few years now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just like, as one of those dudes who's reading about everything on Twitter just because I'm not co-located, it was like, that was very weird. That was very weird to, like, see reported. Be like, I don't know what this is about. Anyway, you wrote about, so we had exit interviews, we got Dwayne, we got Troy, we got Jeremy, we got a bunch of the other players. You wrote about Troy Weaver having like a recollection about a similar vibe around this Pistons team than the same vibe as like those late 2000s Thunder teams. I thought that was interesting. I thought that was not the case. Like, we don't have Kevin Durant and young Russell Westbrook on this Pistons team. So I'm wondering what he sees in the vibes with this team. But what stood out to me. Like, what else stood out to you about Troy Weaver's like end of season comments?
Yeah, he was speaking, you know, to just sort of like that sense of optimism. You know, like, we had a bad season record-wise, but it wasn't a bad season if you're looking at it purely from the standpoint of, you know, what can we be next season and what can we be the season after. I think I did put in the story, like, after the quote, like, the Pistons don't have a Kevin Durant, you know, because that's a very
Very big deal.
You know, it's a very big deal. You know, like, do Isaiah Stewart, Sadiq, or Killian get there? I mean, you know, that's a very massive leap to make, you know, and I don't think they're drafting any of those guys with the expectation that they would be Kevin Durant. Maybe from the standpoint of Russell Westbrook, you know, who came in and people thought he couldn't play point guard and he would be a defensive specialist. And, you know, I don't think anybody, you know, when Westbrook came out in 2008 or 9, whatever season it was, I think it was 2008, that he would be like Oscar Robertson, right?
You know, people thought he was Avery Bradley.
Yeah, like people thought he was like, you know, like Avery Bradley or, you know, like along those lines. So from that standpoint, you know, I think if you're projecting, you know, what these guys could be going forward, you know, obviously like Sadiq Bey, like if he gets 10 extra games a season in a normal year, he probably sets the rookie 3-point record. You know, Isaiah Stewart, you know, looking probably much better than anybody would have expected, even if you didn't think he would bust. You know, I don't know if people thought he would be switching on the point guards and knocking down threes by the end of the season. Yeah, from that standpoint, like, you know, I see where Troy's coming from, just in the sense that we're in good shape. We have a core of guys who work hard, and we feel good that, you know, these guys will continue to get better and that we will be a playoff team sooner rather than later. You know, so I don't think the Pistons expect to jump from 23 wins to 50 wins, which is what OKC did during Troy Weaver's first two seasons. But I don't think, you know, them sneaking into the playoffs next season or even the play-in game is completely out of the question, you know, especially if they get a top four pick this summer. So from that standpoint, you know, I think that optimism is warranted, you know, even though they're still maybe slightly behind OKC was, you know, 13 years ago as far as having to Kevin Durant.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What was your favorite Troy Weaver quote this season? Because he gave us some good ones.
Oh, my favorite Troy Weaver quote. Probably, you know, my clip will be empty. I think is the best one. You know, just in relation to his roster building. My clip will be empty. Like, you don't hear GMs talk about the clip too often. Like, that, I think that's my number one. Or at least that's the one that came off the top of my head. There's a couple other ones that I thought were hilarious, but I would, you know, like if I didn't cover the team and I was just a casual Detroiter and somebody came out with my clip will be empty t-shirt, I'd probably wear that t-shirt. So that's my number one. But what about you, though? Because there's like three or four that could probably contend for that spot.
So, of course, my clip will be empty was definitely at the top of the list. I love my clip will be empty because it doesn't necessarily mean he like hit anything, but like he's going to get these shots off, right? I appreciate that. The one he dropped at the exit interview was like, you got to fight for your right to party if you want to be a good player. I was like, oh, like, okay, that's a good one. We could put that one in the lexicon. His whole speech about how much he liked like centers and big dudes.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was like, good because that's when it became clear that Troy Weaver Reeves was written about him, which I think a lot of people do, obviously. But just that he was aware that kind of became like a meme on NBA Twitter, I thought just really made that funny to me because you don't always see guys acknowledge that people were joking about him on Twitter. So, you know, Troy was a pretty, you know, like at least in interviews, you know, he has a very kind of serious disposition. Yeah, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me because, like, honestly, we didn't really know a whole lot about Troy coming into this job, right? Like, about Troy the person, not Troy the GM, to, you know, steal another Troy Weaver-ism. You know, I was looking for, like, the big Troy Weaver profile because, like, he had been rumored to be, like, a GM in waiting for a long time. So I figured, like, somebody from, like, you know, GQ or ESPN, like, sat down with this dude and was like, let's see what he's about. And as far as I could tell, it was like, that never happened. So he's just this mystery man, as far as, like, me and other fans know. And then we come out, and he's, like, a very serious dude. With, like, we see what he's about with the drafting and restructuring the team really quickly. But then, like, as he gets more comfortable, he's like, this is a pretty funny dude. And he actually, like, and he actually reads Twitter, which is, like, surprising, right? I don't think every NBA GM reads Twitter, right? And so it was nice to see more of Troy Weaver's personality as the season went along, for sure.
Definitely. And one thing I learned on this job, too, is that even if front office people don't have, like, public accounts on Twitter, like a lot of them, one way or another, are still kind of, you know, following the posts of whatever's being said. You know, like, whether, like, I don't know if that's just having a burner or whatever it may be. But
yeah, the Jerry Colangelo burner train, yes.
Yeah, but more or less, they usually know what's going on. So, yeah, I thought Troy showed a lot of personality with that, for sure. Also, just because, you know, like, that was, their offseason was so funny, just because they did acquire so many centers, so for him to actually lean into it and, you know, just acknowledge, like, yeah, I know y'all are joking about me. You know, this. I was like, okay, no, this is great. This is great.
Yeah. I mean, like, it might not be funny if he restructures the entire team again this offseason, but still, like, I'm glad he's got these jokes. So the other thing, Dwayne Casey, he got an extension fairly recently. You weren't around for, like, the previous Dwayne Casey-led Pistons, so were you surprised that, like, this version of Dwayne Casey, coaching young guys instead of coaching vets, wanted the extension and got the extension?
It didn't surprise me, you know, because just from talking to Dwayne this season, I definitely got the sense that, like, despite the losses on some level, he was enjoying this. You know, I think, one, it's just a different environment to go from, you know, having to, you know, coach to make the playoffs with a roster that isn't necessarily equipped to win a playoff game and also was just battered by injuries, to go to a situation where you have a new GM who is a big fan of you, and a situation that's low stakes, and you also have rookies that, you know, by all accounts come in and work hard every day, and, you know, it's just a very easy group to coach. He said that he was re-energized by the season on Monday, and that kind of tracked with just a lot of what he said this season. You know, I think he really enjoys this group. You know, he's commended Tom Gores for embracing the rebuild and, like, you know, this complete refresh of what it was last year. You know, he said that it was needed, which, you know, I think a lot of fans were thinking before the coach to say that too. You know, obviously that, you know, that kind of tells you where the team was at this time last year, you know, coming off of a season that was just completely destroyed by injuries. So it's a really good situation for Dwayne. You know, like, this is a really good group of guys. Like, you know, you've got, you know, vets who are easy to work with. You got a crew of young guys who, you know, just look like they have a ton of potential. I think it's pretty easy to see why Dwayne Casey would be re-energized by this. You know, especially just looking at his last 3 years, right? You know, you have a really good Toronto team, and you know, you're fired, you know, and then, you know, you end up coaching the Pistons, and, you know, you don't win a playoff game, and then you have a season derailed by injuries. So there's a clear direction now for the Pistons, and I think it, you know, for Dwayne Casey, you can look at the next 4 years and say, this would be a good place to be, you know, because I have the support, and these guys want to work. You know, he's compared it to pretty, like, early on when he was coaching Toronto, when you had, you know, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan getting better every year. So I think this is a situation Dwayne likes. And no, it didn't really surprise me that he signed that 1 year extension. It seems like he's really enjoying himself.
All right. That makes sense. That tracks. That Raptor situation is definitely, like, closer to the spectrum of, like, what's going to happen during this rebuild than those early 2000s or late 2000s Thunder. I appreciated Dwayne, like, being a little bit more realistic in his assessment of, like, where these young dudes could potentially end up being. But yeah, it was I you know, I'm not as close to you as the team. I did feel like there were times when Casey was, like, frustrated with this team throughout the year, but it was, like, much fewer and farther between than I think it's been in the past. I think, like, having the young dudes around to teach, like, probably helps in that regard. And something you said that I hadn't really even thought about until now was about the vets, right? Having vets in the locker room who, like, having good vets, right? Again, going back to, like, the Kevin Loves of the world who don't necessarily want to partake in a rebuild. Having players who do and having those guys be an influence in the locker room to your young players probably helps a lot from the mentality of, like, a coach who's just, like, trying to out there or trying to help guys get better and, you know, help young guys grow in their games. And so, yeah, I could see why that would make sense. I wondered, because, you know, Dwayne's 64, and he's not going to coach forever. I wondered, right, if he wanted to win more in his last, in what will likely be his last NBA stop. I don't want to I don't want to like throw dirt on Dwayne Casey's career and put him in the ground, but like I don't know if he wants to coach until he's 70 someplace else. But I did think it was interesting that the season did energize him, as you said, and that the front office saw that energy and decided to reward it.
For sure. And I think, you know, just in general, something Dwayne's talked about as well, it's just, you know, the NBA is just so unpredictable that, you know, you can get a different situation and it still may not turn out the way you want. So, you know, when you have an owner, you know, who believes in you, you have a GM that believes in you, and you have a team that, you know, has a clear upward trajectory, you know, that's a better situation than a lot of coaches. You know, Dwayne didn't have to coach for his job this season, you know, beyond getting these young guys ready to play. And that clearly happened. You know, I mean, even Servetus threw at the end, you know, he had that 16-point first quarter, or first half. It might have cracked 20 points had he not had the injury. But, I think when you just look at the season as a whole, you know, when you have a front office that supports you, an owner that supports you, and a team that's bought into what you're coaching, as a coach, I think that's all you could ask for. So, I think Dwayne sees that, you know, you have the Motor City Crews coming this fall, clearly, you know, Tom Gores is continuing to invest in the team. Of course, Dwayne Casey at the Raptors 905 when he was in Toronto. So, you know, it's a situation that he's been in before, he's familiar with, and I just think he's comfortable.
How are you guys going to handle the Crews? And by you guys, I mean like the Free Press. How are you guys going to handle the Crews next year?
We will see. I would imagine that I would, certainly cover it the same way I cover the Pistons, you know, especially when guys get assigned down there. But we'll see. We haven't had too many conversations about it yet, but I'm sure as we get through the summer, we'll begin to kind of, you know, look more seriously at it and look at exactly how we want to incorporate that coverage. I can see myself, attending games here and there, of course, the season opener. We'll just see. Of course, I didn't cover the Pistons when they were going back and forth from Grand Rapids, but when I was
there. Yeah, logistically, it makes a lot more sense to cover the Motor City Crews a little bit more closely than the Grand Rapids Drive.
Yeah, like the new, like Motor City Crews Arena is literally like a mile south of my apartment.
It's at Wayne State, right?
Yeah.
Or is that Oakland?
It's Wayne State, so okay. They're going to be right off of War. So for me personally, since I'm so close, I really have no excuse either way. But I think we'll have some Crews coverage for sure. We're just not sure the full extent.
All right. Now I'll be looking forward to that. I'll be curious about that because I know like when I come back, it's like if you gave me the choice between like I get to go to a Pistons game with like one other person and it's like, you know, X amount of money for good seats, for food, blah, blah, blah. Or I could take like, you know, literally like six people to a Crews game for, you know, the same price. It's like, okay, I know which one I'm doing. It's like, I'm going to go see the Crews and, enjoy these young kids run up and down the court and dunk. Basketball
yeah,
probably
sure.
worse, but.
Yeah, I mean, if you just like basketball, then, I mean, I could definitely imagine them getting pretty good crowds, you know, especially when you look at, you know, I think Sekou could spend a good amount of time down there, Saben Lee, depending on their point guard rotation. Servetus, you know, they have three second-round picks this summer, and I'm sure, you know, I don't think they're going to add three rookies, but I'm sure one of those guys could become a are we saying a cruiser? Like a G League cruiser? Like if you play for the Crews, you're a cruiser? I guess we'll figure that out. But
obviously. Yeah, we'll figure that out. I like that, though. Cruiser sounds good. Yeah,
cruiser. It just came to mind. I'm like, I don't know what you call somebody who plays for the Crews, but I guess they'll be a cruiser. So, so you'll have some young guys to kind of factor into the future plans for the Pistons, which, you know, if you're a Pistons fan, I think that's a pretty easy sell.
No, for sure. So in the exit interviews, Troy Weaver talked a lot about how they felt like a lot of their development was going to come internally, right? They weren't necessarily looking to make like a huge free agency splash this offseason. They were just going to look to develop the guys that they had. So with that in mind, I'm going to play a little game with you. It's called Stay or Go. I'm going to list some dudes. You're going to tell me if they're going to be on the Pistons next year. Sound good?
All right, let's do it.
All right. First dude, Dennis Smith Jr.
Go. Go. It's just tough to see. Yeah, it's just tough to see. Well, I think he really got screwed by injuries. Like, I mean, he had a triple-double. I think he really showed some flashes of what he could do, while he played. But, the reality is that I think he only played 20 games, like no more than like 22 after the trade. And he just missed so much time down the stretch. We barely saw him in April. Didn't see him at all in May. That was a time period for him where, you know, he really kind of could have showed what he could do, you know, especially with Killian Hayes and out of the rotation, you know, Corey Joseph resting. Like, I just think that really, like, it, you know, that I just think the timing of that just didn't really work in his favor. You know, I won't say for a fact that he won't be back, but when you just look at the priorities for the Pistons, it just doesn't feel like he would be as high priority as some of the other guys.
No, that makes sense. You don't have to, I mean, like, you know, you don't have to justify it to me, but I am curious. Oh, Corey Joseph.
You know, I don't think he comes back for the full amount, but I wouldn't be shocked if they lock him into, like, maybe a slightly cheaper deal. I'm going to say go, you know, just because, you know, he only has, like, $2.4 million of his $12.6 guaranteed. And, you know, I can easily see the Pistons just saying, you know, we can get a much cheaper point guard. You know, we're just going to, you know, save this $10.2 million. I'm going to say go, but it wouldn't shock me if he came back on a cheaper deal and they still just didn't pick up that option. But
yeah, $12 million is a lot for a guy who's a backup point guard on a better version of this team. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Corey Joseph, it's funny. Like, I feel like a lot of Pistons fans don't like Corey Joseph, but if they were trying to win games this year, people would have loved Corey Joseph because he plays hard.
If there would have been fans in the arena, I feel like he would have gotten more love because fans in the arena want to see wins, right?
Right.
But, like, us on Twitter, we're like, no, lose. And Corey is messing up the losing, so, like, you got to go.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a fan and you paid $25 to park, you know, you spent $30 on drinks before the game, you know, you spent $70 on the ticket, like, you're definitely going to root for Corey Joseph. So,
for sure.
Yeah, so I could see him being, like, if he were to come back, I could see him being a fan favorite. But for the sake of the exercise, go.
All right, I got you. Wayne Ellington.
Ooh, that's in the same category as Corey Joseph. I think the Pistons would be open to a reunion with Wayne just because he was great this season. And, I mean, he shot the ball really well. I could also see Wayne saying, you know, I'm 33 years old and, you know, it's time for me to go somewhere where I can win. And just comes down to it. I'm going to say go because he's an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, ultimately the ball is in his court. But he's sort of in the same position as Corey where, you know, he's a good vet. Obviously, he has a big fan in Dwayne Casey. It wouldn't be shocked if he's still here next season.
All right. Hami Diallo.
Stay. Pistons gave up Sevilla in the second-round pick to get him. Troy more or less said verbatim on Monday that he's a big part of the plan. And I mean, he really did show a lot over the last 2 weeks, so that's going to be a stay.
Have you ever seen a GM come out and say, like, for a restricted free agent, like, oh, yeah, we're going to re-sign that guy. I don't really care what it takes. for a guy, like, I like Hami, but Hami is not like we have to extend Jaren Jackson Jr. like when his rookie deal is up, right? Like, it felt a little weird to me that Troy was, like, losing any semblance of, like, leverage in the negotiation with comments like that.
Yeah, and I was the one who, like, asked Troy that, like, question, which I don't know if I put him on the spot at all. But I was curious because he gave up a second-round pick to get Hami. Obviously, you know, restricted free agent this summer, so that's pretty, you know, that seems to be a pretty strong tell that you want this guy to stick around. But, usually with free agents, restricted or unrestricted GMs are just kind of like, oh, you know, we'll see. You know, we like him, but we'll see, yada, yada. You know, I thought Troy gave a pretty strong endorsement that they do see Hami as being in the plans. You know, we'll have to see what the money looks like, you know, because I do think that when Hami scored 35, you know, maybe some people around the league were like, okay, maybe this kid's got, an extra gear to his game. I mean, 6'5", long wingspan, you know, obviously super good athlete. He seems like a guy that, you know, you only need one team to say, okay, if this guy could be a starter, you know, we're going to offer him something the Pistons might not match. So we'll see. But just because it seems like the Pistons really want him, I'm just going to go with stay because it just seems like the goal right now is just retaining as much of the core as possible.
No, I see that too. Jahlil Okafor.
He still has a year on his deal.
He technically has a year on his deal, right? But it's a slightly over the minimum, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I would say go. You know, like again, like you know, it costs them nothing obviously to bring him back. But you know, if you are packaging a trade, you know, he just seems like a guy that you may use to make salaries match. And you know, and just looking at the center rotation too, you know, you have Mason Plumlee, you have Isaiah Stewart. You know, if they, you know, there's a very good center at the top of the lottery that, you know, if he's available, you know, I'm sure there's a good chance he'll become a Piston. So, yeah, just rotation-wise, Jahlil does not strike me as a guy that is, like, a key part of the plan going forward. You know, he may be back, but just looking at sort of the math and way things could go down, I can see him being moved too.
Yeah, it was tough for Jahlil, like, when he got hurt, basically as soon as the season started. And then Isaiah Stewart was much, much better than we expected right away. It was like that was kind of a wrap on his Pistons tenure. And I felt kind of bad for him, right? Like, you read about Jahlil. Jahlil's been through a lot in the NBA. So it was like, I kind of feel for that dude.
He has. I mean, to be a second-round pick, and, you know, when he was with Philly, like, he had some knee injuries that, you know, I think really kind of slowed him down a bit. It really has been unfortunate. And it's just tough that he missed, you know, 2 or 3 months this year with knee surgery as well. Dwayne even mentioned the other week that even at the end of the season, he wasn't quite 100% because he was still just kind of getting his rhythm back. So, you know, I guess in a way this is a big offseason for him too, you know, to get all the way healthy and, you know, show that he could still be a difference maker. But, he went down and I cleared the way for Isaiah Stewart, and Isaiah Stewart just kind of took that torch and ran with it. So,
yeah, for sure. All right, last dude, Frank Jackson.
Stay. 40% shooter, you know, like a guy that just come off the bench and give you instant offense. Yeah, Pistons should keep him for sure. You know, remains to be seen what his contract looks like, but yeah, 40% shooter, yeah, you got to keep him. And I think the Pistons will try to for sure, so that's a stay.
All right. So you got... You listed your NBA ballot on Twitter. How does the ballot work? Not like how does it like work the website where you're going to vote? Like I think I remember asking Rod this. Like you guys rotate between the three beat writers about like who gets to vote. And this year it was your turn. But like how did you get to be in the rotation if like this is your first year?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure how the process works. Like, Rod had mentioned that to me, too, which, you know, I guess that checks out. When I was in Memphis with The Athletic, I didn't vote either year. Under the Commercial Appeal, you know, which is their main newspaper, had a vote one of the years I was there. Actually, now that I think about it, I left before the second award season even began. So, really, that was only one award cycle I was there for, which I didn't get. But, you know, I did get it this time around. You know, I know Rouse about it in the past, so it sounds like they just try to get one person from each market. And I got an email from the NBA maybe 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago asking if I wanted to participate. And I was like, of course, please count me in. And I got the ballot a couple of days later and filled it out Monday night, the day after the season ended. So, yeah, that was fun. You know, I don't think I really had it on my mind whether or not I would get the vote just because I didn't in Memphis. But, to be able to submit that ballot, I mean, yeah, no, that was awesome.
Did you get the email? And you're like, oh crap, I gotta start cramming. This is a big test. Or you one of those dudes is just like, I'm gonna just fill this out with like what I saw this season.
You know, it's like, all right, let's see what Compazzo did with Denver. You know, it's definitely some gaps you have to fill in. So, yeah, you know, definitely, you know, some games you're watching and you know some stats you're looking at. You know, just to make sure you could submit as soundproof a ballot as possible. There's always one guy on Twitter every year that posts their ballot and just gets absolutely destroyed. Like, I remember last year somebody put Andre Drummond on all defense, and the dude just got ratioed to hell. And I was just like,
yeah, I remember that.
That is not going to be me. So definitely a lot of research over the last couple of weeks to make sure I got that right.
All right, so no, but now I'm going to get you flamed on Twitter, though, because you didn't have Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey on your first team all-rookie team.
Did not have them both first team. You know what? I had Sadiq first team, which is winning a lot of people. So if anything, I should get a pat on the back. you know, it was funny because I put that on there. I thought some Pistons fans were going to give me grief for that. Like, why would you not put Isaiah Stewart first team, yada, yada. And I was just like, I mean, when you look across all of the rookies, I think there's a lot of good rookies this year. Like, I think, you know, there was three rookie teams. You know, I think you probably could have supported three because I think there were a lot of guys who were just outside of LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and Halliburton. I think there were probably like eight or nine guys who were pretty firmly in like that second tier. Like, even looking at RJ Hampton got, you know, rookie of the month with Orlando once he started getting minutes. I mean, you know, I think his rookie class overall was pretty talented. But, you know, some of it I was like, I can't put Isaiah Stewart as a big man my first team. No, I just look like a homer. No, I don't look like a homer. So, you know, I'm just going to put Sadiq first team and Isaiah Stewart second team. And, you know, if people get mad at me, then it is what it is. People were mad at – I had, like, Houston fans mad at me because I put Jason Tate in my second team. And I was just like, I don't know how to – explain that, like, a lot of these guys are in the same tier, right? Like, some are going to be first just because of the way it splits down. But, you know, at the end of the day, Tate's going to be first and second for a lot of people. I think Sadiq will be on some first-team ballots and a lot of second-team ballots. There's always some bias. I think some of it just comes down to who you kind of watch. You know, I know people were – Pistons fans were upset at Zach Lowe because he had Desmond Bane first team over Sadiq Bey, but – the Grizzlies are in the playoffs, so you probably watch Bane a lot more than Sadiq. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't think they're getting contract bonuses for being on the first or second team anyway, so it kind of is what it is.
I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised, right? Because I remember, like, that stuff matters to the dudes, and I know it matters to the dudes because their agents complain about it. Because I remember the agent furor that resulted, that came up when somebody got left off the Rising Stars team. And somebody's agent was like, this is a disgrace. Like, how, like, they did. It's like, how did you not, like, put my guy on the Rising Stars team? And it's like, bro, like, it's the Rising Stars team. Like, I watch, like, half of that game every single year before, like, switching to, like, HBO to finish out the night. Like, no one pays attention. But, like, it matters to these dudes. So I understand, like, why it would matter to the fans as well. But, like, yeah, man, I understand, like, being a little bit in a rock and a hard place between, like, being a homer and, like, you know, being the dude who gets ratioed by Pistons Twitter. But, yeah, I think you made the right call for what it's worth. You listen to your gut, and that's all that matters, really.
For sure. If Isaiah Stewart's entire season looks like his last 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
Probably first team. But I think because Stewart, for him, was just more of a slow progression to becoming what he was at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, he just struck me as more of a second-team guy. Like, if he was splashing threes from game one, I think he would have had a really strong case for that first team for sure. But, you know, but again, I feel like this rookie season, like, you had, you know, three guys who were a tier above the rest, and then it's just, you know, in various cases, like, everybody else. You know, I know, I think one of the Cleveland writers put Isaac Okoro on his second team. You know, which you could say he's a homer, but Okoro also was a pretty solid rookie, you know. So it's just, there's always going to be some personal bias, but, you know, at the same time, you have to put some guys in the first team, you have to put some on the second team. Like, if you had a ranking, right, and you just had a different level of points associated with each ranking, maybe you would avoid some of that because it's like, well, you know, I didn't just leave Okoro off of either team. You know, I just ranked him 11th and he still got points from being a 11th. So. Yeah, on some level, I just think agents should not get mad at the player, but the game, because the game requires you to make some tough decisions.
I feel that. Yeah. All right, the only other thing with the awards I was going to ask you about, and it's not Pistons related, but I don't care. You had Julius Randle fifth on your MVP ballot?
Fifth on my MVP ballot. Julius Randle.
Over Dame?
Nobody thought the Knicks were going to win 41 games this season. Like, people thought they were going to win half of that. And that is because of Tibbs, and that is because of Julius Randle. You know, I think when you have a team that exceeds expectations to that extent, you know, you have to reward that on some level. You know, I had Tibbs number one on my Coach of the Year vote because he just completely transformed that Knicks team, especially defensively. You know, I don't think anybody had them. I mean, to be a four seed in the East, like, when most people probably didn't think they were going to win 25 games, it's just an insane turnaround in such a short amount of time. You know, Randle made a huge leap forward this season, became an elite three-point shooter after, you know, barely being league average, if that, you know, his first five or six seasons. Just, he's always been a really good playmaking forward. But just, I thought this season was just like the full package for him. You know, he's the face of that Knicks team that exceeded expectations, and you know, and I guess purely just by the definition of MVP, he kind of got the same bump that I gave Steph. Whereas, you know, what is this team if we remove you from it? You know, so the Knicks, they just surpassed expectations so much that Randall just felt like a good pick at five for me. I know some people.
That's what the most improved player is for.
Well, he was on one
of that. Gave
too.
Julius Randle.
He was on that too. You know what? If the Knicks won like 10 fewer games, he wouldn't have been on my MVP. But like when you're a playoff team and you improved that substantially, you get a little love on both. It was between him and Chris Paul for that fifth spot. And there's a good argument for Chris Paul too. But for me, I gave Randle the nod.
Okay, you heard it here first, guys. Omari Sankofa, New York, tool of the New York media.
Oh, man. I have people in New York, but hey, you know, I gotta give credit where credit's due.
So are you gonna start doing like draft research? Like, when do you start the whole like draft process?
I started a little bit toward it, like the end of the season, but you know, this week I've just kind of begun diving more into like, you know, outside of like that top, you know, three or four. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for the most part, a lot of people were at this point are pretty familiar with, you know, Cade Cunningham and the top. But I've definitely been looking more at Evan Mobley, you know, a little bit more at, you know, Jalen Green. You know, Suggs, like not as much just from watching college basketball, seeing that Gonzaga run. You know, you feel like I have a pretty good grasp on him. But Arlie didn't really get to see as much G-League Ignite as I wanted. So definitely looking at Green and Kuminga a lot more over the last week or so.
Yeah, the Ignite games were on at very inconvenient times if you, like, wanted to watch, just, like, sit down and catch them. They were on at, like, 2:30 in the afternoon a lot for reasons I don't fully understand from, like, an NBA advertising perspective. But yeah, do you get a sense of who the team likes, or is it a little too early for that?
A little early. I have a sense to an extent on certain guys, but not to the point to where I want to start unveiling too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like the only thing I will say, and I bring it up because I noticed you and a couple other people talking about it on Twitter like the other week, is when it comes to Evan Mobley, you know, just knowing Troy, knowing he likes centers, like, you know, I would think that he would probably be pretty high on Detroit's draft board. And I would encourage Pistons fans to warm up to the idea of Evan Mobley, because for some reason there seems to be a lot of anti-Mobley sentiment on certain corners of Pistons Twitter or Reddit or wherever. And that kind of confuses me because I think, you know, he's a pretty clear number two or three in this draft. So that's one thing I will say. You know, if you don't like Evan Mobley, I would encourage you to look into him a little bit more, because he's not only the best center in this draft, but he would have been the best center in last year's draft too. And, you know, like we said earlier in the pod, Troy Weaver obviously likes centers a lot. So, you know, I would, you know, we don't know where that pick's going to fall, but I would encourage you to warm up to that a little bit.
Who are you watching in the playoffs?
Are you
watching Memphis tonight?
I am watching Memphis tonight. It's up. I have a meeting at like 7, so I'm going to miss probably the first quarter, but I am going to watch Memphis tonight. You know, just because, you know, that's like the team I covered. You know, I still know a lot of people on the team down there. And that's a really fun team. Like, I think Ja, not even just because I covered him, I genuinely think Ja is one of the most fun players to watch in the entire NBA. You know, we've just seen very few players with his level of passing who are also his level of athlete. You know, usually mm-hmm. one or the other, and he does both. So I'll be watching a lot of Grizzlies. I'll be watching Phoenix just because I think that's a fun team too. I've always liked Chris Paul. He's been one of my favorite players to watch. Probably those two teams. Beyond that, it's just kind of like, you know, whatever the most interesting game is. But the Grizzlies and Phoenix for sure. What about you?
I'll probably be watching Portland. It was good to dodge the Portland Clippers like first round series, because I would have been pretty conflicted. But with Portland Denver, I feel very strongly. It's like I'll be pulling for Portland. I love Dame. I'll be like, we talked about Julius Randle a bunch, and I ribbed you about it. But I will be really interested to watch that Hawks Knicks series, if only because like both of those teams are like, you know, no one expected that to be the 4-5 coming into this year, and because it's a series between those two teams, one of them is making it to the second round of the playoffs, which is also like definitely not something I would have said about either of those teams at the beginning of this year. And so the ramifications of that, I think, are going to be really interesting. Like, whoever wins that series might be convinced that they're a little bit closer than perhaps they actually are. And so I want to see, like, how that ripple effect kind of impacts them. So that's the series I'll be paying the most attention to in the East, at least.
Yeah, they're also just two very different teams. So
yeah, very much.
So I think that'll just be fun from the standpoint of, stylistically, just on opposite ends. Trey Young obviously is a guy who's always fun to watch too, and of course I like Randall looking at my ballot. So yeah, that's definitely one that's up there for me as well.
Yeah, I was joking on the other podcast. I was like, the Knicks play very like Detroit Pistons-esque, right? Like, they play really hard, really physically on defense. They make you work on every possession, and then they have like two dudes who can score the basketball.
Yeah, exactly. You look at that team and. You just kind of wonder where they would be without Randall and Derrick Rose for sure. And shout out to Derrick Rose, by the way. I don't think anyone expected he would be as good with New York as he's been. It makes a lot more sense why he, requested to play for Tibbs now in that team, because it seems like their fortunes really began to change when he got there. But, I just think Randall's fun to watch. Like, he came out of, the draft as just sort of a really strong, just kind of mobile guy who could, post up. He had his mid-range jumper pass really well. I just think he's really unique. He has like a throwback game, but also like a lot of modern elements to it that I just think makes him really unique to watch.
Yeah, you've got like a throwback frame, right? Like, he looks like not out of place in like the 90s in NBA, but he's shooting 42% from three. So it's like on like good volume. So it's like it's this nice blend between like old school and new school. So like, I get it, but. But still, man, fifth in MVP voting. I don't know about that one. Last question. How many games are our Michigan State Spartans going to win in football this season?
I'm reluctant to get my hopes up because the last few years for Michigan State
have not been good.
Just have not been good at all. And, of course, last season was just a bit of a mess with, new coach and COVID and just everything else.
Hey, beat Michigan.
They did beat Michigan, so I guess it was still a good season. That's tough. I mean, I could see them winning. I think maybe 6-7 wins would be – I would consider that to be a pretty solid season for them. I think anytime you have a new regime come in, there's like this sort of transitionary period of, everybody just kind of figuring their bearings out. I think they've been recruiting pretty well. I definitely like their offseason. They just added another transfer to today. I'm gonna go with 6-7 wins. I think if they want 7 wins, I'll be pretty happy with the season. And I mostly just want them to see them get this quarterback situation settled, because that's been a mess. Seems like since Connor Cook. So that's them, the record. I just want to see just substantial progress from like the skill side. Can we get a consistent quarterback? Like, can we get every down running back again? That's been kind of shaky since, Jeremy Langford, it seems like. I'll be looking at the finer details a bit more, but I'll be very happy with a 7-win season for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like our wide receiver core, which made it so frustrating that it seemed like we got such inconsistent play at quarterback. I still don't know if we have consistent play at quarterback. The transfer dude they brought in from Temple is like, he's like a, a fifth year senior or whatever, but like, I don't know if he's any good. He played at Temple. So I will see. I think I'm slightly less optimistic than you. I think like 5 wins probably where we end up. And 5 wins and you beat Michigan again, like, sure, I'll take it. Whatever you got.
Yeah, I would take that for sure. And I got to get down to a game this fall, because I was looking forward to, like, when I moved back, it's like, man, I could go see Michigan State football, basketball, all that. Didn't quite materialize. But, I agree. I'm curious to see how Anthony Russo looks. Since I attended Michigan State, my freshman year was in 2012. It doesn't look like they've had any luck with any of their transfers. But, I'm going to try not to let D'Antonio's shadow hang over Mel Tucker too much. It's a new coach, and we'll see where he comes as far as the talent development. But cautiously optimistic. 7 might be a bit high, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility either.
I like what Tucker has done so far. I like the emphasis on recruiting, which had definitely slipped under Dan. We're doing a whole different podcast at this point. I don't care. Which the recruiting had definitely slipped under D'Antonio after that Donnie Corley class that didn't really work out for reasons that didn't have a lot to do with what happened on the football field.
Yeah,
you can tell like that kind of tempered what he thought he could recruit. And I like the emphasis on, I think the kids like the emphasis on like what they've been doing on social media. Like I've definitely noticed their social media presence has been like way more vibrant under Mel Tucker than it was under D'Antonio. And because you are always trying to appeal to 16, 17 year old kids and kids love that stuff. Like I think that's going to work out for them. Like is that an advantage? Like, no, but I think it's cool. And I'll take all the little things I can get at this point.
Yeah. Like Mel Tucker, like he definitely has like a younger energy to him, which mm-hmm. I think just as far as like bringing some energy, you know, into the team, you know, which I think it needed because it just kind of seems like they limped toward the finish during D'Antonio's last year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's definitely been good to see. You know, I have enjoyed, you know, seeing them sort of engage Twitter a bit more. And, you know, we'll see if it carries over. But, you know, I guess you'll take any sign of good news as good news. So, yeah, I have enjoyed seeing that too.
Amari Sankofa, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find your work.
Thank you so much for having me on here, man. People can follow me on Twitter at my first and last name. That's OmariSankofa. And you can read all of my content on the Detroit Free Press's website, which is freep.com.
You guys need to subscribe to the Freep. I have my Freep subscription. It's very nice. I appreciate the app. The app is much better than I thought it would be for some reason, but you really need to check out what Omari is going to be working on this offseason. I can't wait to see it. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.